say, ooh, baby, baby, maybe we're just two little birds in a tree. And if our wings are working, we better jump off this branch and see. Hey, this one isn't up to me, oh no.
Welcome to this episode of Birds in a Tree. My name is Bridget Manley, and I'm your host. Today's episode is for all my career moms, all of my working mothers who are proud of what they do and being able to contribute financially to the home, but also are kind of torn between home responsibilities, who takes care of what, whether the husbands also take care of the kids and the work of the home and all of that. All of those issues are discussed in today's episode. My guest today is Laurie, and I am not kidding you when I tell you that Laurie really truly is one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. She's a mechanical engineer, has been a career woman for a few decades. Straight out of college, this girl was boss lady. And her husband have two sons. And when they were little, Laurie kind of took the opportunity to be laid off from the company that she had worked for since she had been in college. And she took a severance package because they were moving to the South and was able to take a few months, step back, hang out with her kids, who at the time weren't in school yet, take them on field trips, do all of the fun things that you kind of fantasize about when you're a working mother. But then knowing that ultimately she's a career woman and this is what she wants to do, and she went back to work. And so we talk a lot about kind of shifting roles in your family and how, you know, when someone takes on a new job, the roles and the responsibilities in the family get shifted to one parent or another, depending on what the new job responsibility is. And so that's a really fun conversation that I loved having with her, because it's just a different perspective on sharing responsibilities in the home with your partner. And there's one other aspect that's really fun about this conversation. And when Laurie's son was very little, they had some health news that ultimately turned out to be fine, but at the time was really scary. And I'll let her tell the story, but it's really interesting because we've all sort of had that moment when someone we know or someone we love or a stranger says something to us that's so desperately needed in the moment, and it sticks with you forever. So I won't go any further into that, but I think you'll really enjoy that part of her story. This is Laurie's story. Laurie, thank you so much for joining me. I love you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm excited to be on the phone with you.
So full disclosure, you and I have been friends for a very long time. We are sorority sisters, and we lived together, and we have kept in touch all of these 2 years since we're only 21 years old, right?
Yes, exactly. We are, yes. We are very, very young still.
Yes, exactly. And so, okay, so you have these two beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful, just like talkative and energetic and beautiful boys. Gregory is almost 8. Or no, he is 8, right?
Yes, Greg's 8.
And Charlie is almost 7, right?
Almost 7. They are 17 months apart.
Wow. And I remember, when we were hanging out with you once and Gregory was real little and you said, so I'm pregnant again.
Yes, he was 8 months old. Not my greatest decision ever, but we made it through.
They're kind of like Irish twins, almost. They're not born in the same year, but they're very close.
Yeah, they're 17 months apart, and it was definitely, Greg was 8 months old when I got home from a 2-week-long trip to Canada, and then we got Charlie. So it was really different. I was just pregnant, it seemed like forever, but...
It did kind of seem like forever.
It did. It really did. Like, as soon as Greg was born, then I'm like, all right, I'm starting to lose some baby weight. I'm starting to get out. And then I go on a business trip for a couple weeks, and I come back, and bam, I'm like 3 days later, I'm pregnant. And like, then I'm like, oh, my God, I have to call my mom and tell her.
Right. Right. We're like in our 30s, and we're like, what is our mom going to say?
I know, exactly. But she was really excited. And then we got our Charlie, and he's just the most magnificent thing ever. And the coolest part that I think about them being so close is they don't ever know anything other than having each other. Does that make sense? They only know having a brother. They don't remember not having the other one. So they're incredibly close, which is really nice.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that. Yeah. I never even like really thought about it like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, and they look out for each other. And I've always told Gregory being the older, more strong-headed one, that he's not responsible for Charlie, but his job as a big brother is to look out for Charlie. And Charlie's a little bit more la 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 la, like just a sweet, sweet kid. He kind of just does his own thing. And I've always told Gregory, I was like, it's your job as a big brother. You look out for him. You can stick up for somebody. You can stick up for Charlie. You should always stick up for Charlie. But, always just make sure you've got his back. He's like, okay.
I love that. And they are. Cool. They're like best friends. Like they're always together and they're always nice to each other. I know you're probably saying, no, they're not. But like when I'm around them, they're always super sweet and super cool to each other.
Yeah, they are. And they're probably matching because I tend to dress them alike and I need to stop doing that.
Like at some point, they're not going to let you do it. So if they let you do it, then do it.
Yeah, they still do. So I can get away with it for the most part. But I feel like Greg's on the very verge of being like, yeah, no, I'm not wearing the same shirt that my brother's wearing.
Oh, man.
I know. It's so easy to shop. You just like two of the same thing in different sizes and you move on. It's
right.
Wonderful. Then I have hand-me-downs, too, because I'm always like, oh, sweet. Now you outgrew this now because right on to your brother.
Exactly. I think it's genius. Okay, so one of the things that I love about you and I love about your parenting story is that you were working for a company and they decided to move operations like across the country, right?
Yep. I was laid off as a result of what they were intending to do, and so I took that and decided I wasn't ready to move or go anywhere. I wanted to stay in Maryland with my family and just decided to leave without another job lined up. And I did it.
Yeah, and you did it. And I think that's so ballsy. Like, that's all of the balls. That's so rad. And so, like, how many months were you, like, full-time mom?
Full-time mom was about 3 months. And I intentionally did not work for the first month that I was off. I didn't try to look for a job. I did a little bit. But I just wanted to spend that time with the boys while they were still really little and just had that time. So I spent a month, like, literally just playing with them every day, taking my mom and dad had always watched my boys since they were born. This was the first time I'd actually been a stay-at-home parent. And so I took them to preschool and did all that stuff that my parents had been doing for a couple of years, probably. The boys were, I think, 4 and 3 at the time, or even maybe a little older, maybe 5 and 4. I don't remember. It's been 3 years now. But yeah, I got to take them to nursery school. I got to, go to the grocery store in the middle of the day and go to Carter's in the middle of the day. Just things that I had never done with them because I worked all the time.
Right. And you were like, you are a career woman. Like, you're an engineer. You might be the smartest person I know. No lie. And it's all true. And you had worked. I mean, you worked out of college. You had a big girl job and you were out there. And then all of a sudden you have this like month where you just get to like be with them.
Yeah, I almost felt guilty at some point. Like, I felt like I should be working, but I knew that I just wanted to take that deep breath and spend the time with the boys. And I love it. Going back and like looking at all the pictures of all the cool stuff we did, which wasn't like anything major. We went to the zoo and we went to restaurants and we just did like little things around the area. But like even just playing at home, I had pictures in the middle of the day when we're like in our pajamas playing. And I'm like, wow, it's the middle of the day. He's like, who does that?
Did you like it? Did you think to yourself, like, I could do this forever? Or did you think like, I am a working mother and this is what I do. This is my identity.
I think I did like it, but I think I was anxious too. I wanted to get back to work just because, health insurance and I had to go and get my, get our family health insurance on my own. And with Charlie, some of the things that we have with his neck and stuff like that, if there had been a traumatic accident, I needed to make sure we had that. So I think there was a lot of anxiety about not knowing what was going to happen, but I needed to have everything planned out in the event that, the worst happened. Fortunately, nothing did, but I was able to like line up my own health insurance, get everything kind of all squared away and then really be able to, I want to say like relax for a month because it wasn't like a relaxing time when you're not working and, you know, the severance package only lasts so long, you're like, okay, I've got to start working. And you start trying to figure things out. You get all stressed out. But fortunately, everything worked out. But it was a very stressful time. But I think just having that extra time with the boys is something that I won't forget. And I'm really glad that I did.
Yeah. And especially at such a young age, too. Like, you know, because they are so, so little and everything is new and there aren't like crazy activities to be going to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it worked out. I mean, it was definitely stressful on the family, but we made it through. And I was working again before the end of May of that same year. So like just about 3 months, I'd been interviewing and then got hired for the job I'm still with now 3 years later, which I love. And, you know, back into the swing of things in my career and, you know, just keep plugging along and adjusting. So then it was a good experience. Like looking back, like in the middle of it, I was petrified. I had no idea what we were going to do. And looking back, I think it's one of the best things that ever happened to me, both career-wise and just giving me that confidence to know that I can raise a family and make this happen. And with the support of Dan, you know, we can just figure it out and make things work.
And speaking of Dan, your beautiful husband, first of all, your love story is like the cutest thing on earth. You met in college.
Oh, thank you.
And you guys have been together ever since. And I just love you both so much. And he has always been such a good dad and such a good husband. But you said that after you took this new job, he had to step up and he did. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, he definitely did. In my previous job was geographically located just like near where I grew up, where my parents still live. So I was always doing the dropping the babies off, picking the babies up. You know, it was always like 10 times, like 5 drop-offs in the morning and 5 pickups in the evenings, week in, week out for years. I did all the drop-offs and stuff like that. And then when I got my new job, I'm working an hour away in the other direction from my parents' house. And the boys were starting to get into like kindergarten and pre-K. So Dan just had to step up and do, I want to say, like, he pretty much does the majority of drop-offs and pickups. And that's a lot of work. Like, I will give him massive credit because I get up and leave before, like, just as they're getting up now. And then he gets them ready for school, feeds them breakfast, gets them dressed, gets them teeth brushed, hair brushed, and gets everybody out the door. And they have the cutest little routine. And they understand it. And, of course, they're not going to do things exactly the way that I would want things done. But they have a system, and it absolutely works. And it's really cool to see. And the boys will call me. They'll call me, hey, daddy, because one or two mornings a week, I'll try to drop them off at school. And yeah, they're just so used to Dan's routine that sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm messing this up. They're going to get out of sync. But yeah, he absolutely had to step up and start doing it. And he just did it. It was amazing.
I love what you just said, that sometimes he doesn't do things that the way I would do them. And I feel like we as mothers, it's just in our nature to want to try to control everything and have everything done the way we would do it. And so I wanted to ask you, was it hard for you to like take a step back and say like, he can do this. He is a parent just like I am, and I'm going to let go. Or was it easy? Like, did you trust him and you were like, he can do this?
I think it's harder for me than it should have been, because like, anyway, and I had to let go. Like, I'm crazy. Like, if I like to have, make sure they're wearing like at least matching pants and a matching shirt, which ultimately doesn't mean a thing. If he's got them in sweatpants and shirts and they're clothed and they're clean, that's a success. And he's actually, sometimes it's cute. He gets them better dressed than I would, because he like lays out their clothes the night before and works with them to do that. So I think I made it harder than it needed to be, because I didn't understand that the way that I had done things all along, you know, it wasn't necessarily the best way. It was just the best way that it worked for me. But he had now had the opportunity to figure out the best way that things work for him and for the boys in their new situation. And it really did work. Like, he just figured things out that were different than way than I was doing them. But like, he helps them with their cereal every morning, and he already knows what they want before they get up. He'll sometimes pour their cereal, and then they just come down and put the milk on it now. Like, it's just, it's so neat to see that relationship build between them, because they all trust each other. It's just like, they know they're going to get out of the door by, you know, 7:35. And I don't know how it happens some days, but they do every day.
They do it.
Oh, no.
That's all that counts, right?
Yeah, exactly. They come. I come home and there's a ton of toothpaste in the sink, but you know what? They brush their teeth, so that's a win.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Do you have a renewed sense of appreciation for Dan and for your relationship because of everything that's happened in this whole huge life and career switch?
Yeah, I think I just really saw him take the time to shine. And, you know, and I guess probably unintentionally I had taken over part of parenting. And to some extent, I probably made him feel guilty for not doing more because I was doing so much. And I think that when he had the opportunity to just figure it out on his own, he was just like, I got this. And he did it. So I think it made us stronger as a couple because I knew I can rely on him. And then if the school nurse calls, he's now the one that's 10 minutes away. I'm an hour away. So he's got to be the one that goes and picks them up if they don't feel good at school or something happens. So it's really been a change for us because I was always theoretically in control of everything, the scheduling and the timing and the problem resolution. He just has to, you know, he's just really taken the ball and been able to resolve it all. And I'm an hour away. It's just been a really neat thing to watch and learn together.
I think it's super cool that you have maintained your career. And again, I am not saying this because I'm trying to be sweet. Like, you really are one of the smartest people I've ever met. And when I look at you, I look at your boys, and I think that you are giving them such an excellent role model of a strong, smart woman. Do you feel the same way?
I do. And a funny story about this. Back in kindergarten, Gregory came home one day and he had this thing in his backpack. And I pulled it out and there was this little piece of paper and it had all the little boys' names in his class written on it. And I was like, Gregory, what is that? And I was like, he's like, this is my petition. And I'm like, okay, I didn't learn about petitions in kindergarten, but tell me about this. And he's like, oh, okay. And he goes, well, all the little girls in the class decided that they wanted to start dolphins.com. And I didn't like that idea. And so I got all the little boys in the class to sign this petition that says we're going to do something cooler, like rhinoceros.com or giraffe.com. And I was like, wow, you know, that's a really interesting approach. I think that you did that fairly. I said, but first of all, Greg, you're not allowed to tell the little girls what they can do. You let them decide what they want to do and you either participate or you don't, but you don't get to do that. He's like, but I started a petition. And I'm like, okay, well, I appreciate your non-violent approach to this, but like, it's not your job to tell them what they can and cannot do. And it was just funny because he was in kindergarten and we're having this conversation about something that's like so much beyond kindergarten. It's like, well, we didn't like it, but we all talked about it and all the boys signed this one. And then, and here's the funnier part. All the little check marks were like, because he's left-handed, we're like backwards, and they were taped onto the page next to their names. And I was like, Gregory, why are they all taped? And he goes, well, that's so I can move them around if I want to. I was like, no, you can't do that. You don't get to move around the post if you want. That's not how it works. And he's like, but I use tape. And I'm like, yes, I understand that you can physically move them around, but that doesn't work. If they vote one way, you have to leave it. This is...
Wow, that's a level of genius that, like, wow.
It's kind of evil, but I'm like, so we're having this whole, and the whole time, and I'm taking pictures of this petition, and I'm like sending it to my sister, and I'm like, it's kindergarten, he's making petitions and crooked votes on it by the same. I'm like, this is terrible. So, but yeah.
Oh my God, I love him.
I know, and what I want my boys to understand that anybody can be strong and powerful and smart. But you have to put in the time and the energy to achieve that. Nobody just gives it to you. If you want to do well at something, you have to try. You have to put in all the effort. And it doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl or a mommy or a daddy or whatever. If you want to be something, you have to commit yourself to it. And that's kind of what I want them to see. So if I like that they see that both Dan and I get up and we go to work every day and we work really hard and we work long hours, you know, sometimes that, you know, it takes away from our family time, but it's all important and we're doing it ultimately for them to set a good example for them.
I love that. I really love that. And I know that you have had in your life, and when you said this to me, I had this just enlightening of like, oh my God, yes, that has totally happened to me. So tell me a little bit about having someone come into your life for just a minute and it changing your perspective on parenting or your outlook. Tell me.
Absolutely. When Charlie was born, he had some what we thought was torticollis, and it turns out to be like some structural deformations in his cervical spine. And we went through all this time where we were, you know, seeing the pediatrician, and we went up to Hopkins and we were seeing doctors there. And I remember we went up to Hopkins to see Dr. Carson so he could look at Charlie's head, because I thought we were just going to get this little medical evaluation for a doc band. And we got some really tough information where he thought he was going to have to do surgery on Charlie's skull and all this stuff. And so Dan and I were leaving the office after leaving the doctor's office up at Hopkins, and we're standing, and Charlie's like 10 months old. He's a tiny baby at this point. And I'm holding his head and I'm crying because I just got a bunch of information that I wasn't ready to process yet. And I'm standing by the elevator with Dan, and I'm holding the baby, I'm holding Charlie. And this woman standing next to me looks over at him and she goes, "Oh, he's such a sweet pea. Don't worry. Everything is just going to be all right." And then sweet pea isn't like a normal name. It's pretty common. Everybody calls their kids sweet pea, but I've always called Charlie sweet pea since the moment he was born. And then I just looked back and this woman was gone, but it was just like for like literally 15 seconds she was in our life. And she just said in the most calming voice, "Just don't worry.
Wow.
Everything's going to be okay." And then she was just gone. And we were in this immensely busy hospital, just all this stuff is going on around. And I just remember holding Charlie and I was crying because I couldn't process all this stuff. And just that 15 seconds, she was just so peaceful. And she had said exactly what needed to be said. And she used the word sweet pea because I turned to look for Dan because I was like, "That's what we call him." And when I turned back, she was just gone. It was just one of those parenting moments where I had no idea what to do and a total stranger made everything better.
And like, did it set you at peace immediately?
It did. I was just like, I took a deep breath and I was like, "We'll figure this out." I mean, it was just such a bizarre experience because I was so upset. I had no idea how to handle the information that we'd just been giving, and just totally changed everything in 15 seconds. And I didn't even get a chance to like turn back and be like, "Wow, that's what I call him," or to acknowledge how meaningful what she had said. And she was gone. It was just so, and I'll never forget that. I remember thinking like, "Wow, I definitely needed that right there." And it was just, you know, totally random. It was just really weird.
That is, I'm sorry, it just feels like more than coincidence, you know? It was exactly what you needed.
Yeah, it was exactly what we needed at that moment. And I've never been able to explain it. It was just bizarre. I mean, just 15 seconds and I totally was like, "Wow, she needed to be there right that moment in time to tell us that."
Yeah, and you've remembered it this whole time.
Yeah, Charlie was 10 months old now and he's almost 7. So all this time I often think about that. Like if I ever get into like just like a tough parenting situation or something like that, I'm like, "You know what? Everything is going to be okay. We'll figure it out."
And she was right.
Bizarre.
I mean, he's like,
yeah, and she was totally right.
Yeah, he's a happy, healthy, beautiful boy, and you didn't even have to have surgery, right?
No, we didn't. I mean, we got the official diagnosis of Klippel-Feil syndrome, but he has been a happy, healthy child, and his, you know, the deformations in his cervical spine aren't ever going to go away, and we do things to make sure he doesn't permanently injure himself. But yeah, we are very, very lucky that he's as happy and healthy as he is. Pretty cool. But
that's wild. You know. And I've heard that so often. Like you read something or you see something, and it totally affects the way you parent for the rest of your life. You know, and I remember my mom, I called her when Ben was really young, a couple of months, and we had gone to the doctor and he wasn't weighing as much as he should. And I was really worried about it and I'm crying and, you know, I wasn't making enough breast milk and blah, 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 blah. And I was sad because I was going to have to start supplementing. He was small enough that I just needed to give him more to get his weight up at that moment. And I remember thinking like, "Oh, she probably just said that to like immediately make me feel better." But it is stuck. The piece of advice has stuck with me for forever. She just said, "You do what you need to do to survive." And every time I feel bad because like, you know, I take a phone call and I put an iPad in my kid's face for 5 or 10 minutes or, you know, whatever, anything that comes down the road where you think like, "Oh, I'm being a bad mom right now." That piece of advice comes up in my head over and over. You do what you need to do to survive. Those little moments that stick with you. And I'm sure that woman's...
Yeah, I would just love to, if I ever, and I don't even know if I would recognize her. I probably wouldn't, because it was just such a tiny, minute moment that she was in our lives that it had that impact. And it's just like, I feel like different than my childhood. When I was growing up, I feel like my brother and my sister and I, we could run around and play and do things kind of at our own, I don't want to say at our own will, but like, I feel like my children, different than me, they experience so much more constraints of the adult world than I ever did as a child. Like my boys are always on a schedule. We're either always going to school, or we have to be here, we have to be there, mommy and daddy have to be at work. And so that they always feel that time constraint, and indirectly they feel the constraints of money. You know, we're not able to do this. We're not, you know, we can do this, but this costs this. And like, I don't feel like I ever experienced that as a child, but I feel like my boys experience adult constraints much, much earlier than I ever did. And they may not know it, but they do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Like
I agree. I always think about that too, because you see those things on Facebook that like people pass around, like back in my day, we didn't have car seats. You know, back in my day, we used to run the mountain naked at 4 a.m., you know, and and to an extent, that's true. You know, I remember, yes, being allowed to be out and about on bikes and stuff. But then the other part of me thinks that we started putting car seats into cars because people would crash and their babies would be dead. You know, we stopped putting stuff in the crib because babies can't get out of a blanket and they die. So, yes, I feel like we probably are helicoptering maybe too much. But little kids would be abducted. And so as a result, people started watching their kids more, you know? So, do these things not out of, like, you know, your kids are leading this fulfilling, full life, and you have to go to work to pay the bills. So, there are some gives and some takes, you know, because we have built off of the foundations that our parents laid for us, and they wanted us to survive, and we want our children to survive. And so this is how progress is made. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's more of a, rather than being a reactionary parenting thing, it's more of a, because our parents did things differently that our parents changed when they raised us. So I don't think I'd let I remember I used to tie the wagon to the bike with the jump rope and put the other kids in that. And I feel like if I saw my boys doing that now, I'd be like, nope.
You die, right?
That's gonna happen. We're not going to play this. We are not paying the dental bill associated with what's about to happen. Right. It's not going to, nope, we're good. But looking back, I never fell out of the wagon and crashed my head into the, you know. But
my brother did. We had to go to the hospital. He had to have like 5 stitches in his head because he was doing that very thing and went around the curve in the road and tumbled out. And they had to, you know, whatever. They went to the ER. It's a great story now. So sure, you know, I mean.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Can you tell me about Mount Laundry?
Oh, Mount Laundry. I love Mount Laundry.
So, Mount Laundry is my favorite theory.
I know. This is my theory on parenting. And there's literally always a giant pile of laundry in our room where the washer and dryer are. It's always there. It never goes away. It's just a mountain of laundry. And I feel like it's kind of like parenting. It's relentless. It's always there. It never goes away. And sometimes you get through it and it's all folded and neat and pretty and it's, you know, all tucked away in the drawers and everything's good. And then the other parts of the day or the year or the week or the month, it's all over the place. There's missing socks. You can't find anything you want. It's just like parenting. It's messy. It's dirty. It's stinky. There's things that you, favorite pieces of like overalls or sweatshirts or something. They're sometimes buried in there that you can't find. And then when you find them, it's like a prize. You're like, yeah, found it.
I didn't know I had this. I forgot about this.
I know, and it's like when your kid does something really cool that or says something really cute that they haven't said in a while because you thought they outgrew it. Like Charlie says, instead of saying mirror, he says mirror, and it's so cute. And then he's older now, so he catches himself and he stops saying mirror, and he'll say mirror. But sometimes he'll have these little treasure moments when he goes, oh, I'm looking in the mirror, and Dan and I just look at each other and we're smiling, we're like, oh, there's a little glimpse into the past that is so fleeting away. So it's just like kind of, it's just that gigantic pile of laundry that sits there all the time. And it's sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. And it's just, yeah, I'm not laundering.
I love that. I love that. Like, that is so funny and so to the point of parenthood. It's so true. It never ends, but it's all gravy. Like, it's all good and we're all getting through it and it's all awesome.
See, we're lucky that we have a gigantic pile of clothes that we have to wash and have the, and have the, you know, the washing machine in the home and all that stuff to do that in. So it's, we're lucky to have that pile of laundry, and that's, you know, it's just our responsibility to deal with it, just like parenting.
That's
so
true.
It's kind of cool.
You are wise and I love you so much. Thank you so much for talking to me, because I think that your perspective is like one of my favorites, and I love your humor that you bring to parenting and to marriage. You know, when I started having kids, I looked to you because I was like, she's fantastic. She's a great parent. I'm just going to do what she does.
Well, thank you. I don't do everything all the time.
I love you. Thank you so much, Laurie.
Oh, thank you, Bridget. I love you too.
Thank you so much, Laurie. And thank you so much for listening. If you have a great parenting story, perspective, I would love to talk to you. I would love to interview you. Please send me an email to birdsinatree@outlook.com or find us on Facebook, Birds in a Tree Radio, or on Twitter @birdsradio. I would love to interview you or hear your story. Also, we're on the Alexa app now, which is awesome. And we are on Stitcher and the Google Play Store and iTunes and everywhere you find podcasts. So please tell your friends. We really appreciate you spreading the word. And until next time, I'm Bridget Manley, and this is Birds in a Tree.